Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody that comes into the chat room, even the people with opposing views, we thank you. We appreciate everything you do. And again, this is Black Free Thinkers. My name is Kim, and I am here, and we are here to challenge you to think and live for yourself, not convert you. And Ms. Mandy, are you there?
I am here. Good afternoon, everyone. Hello? Oh.
Yes, ma'am. Good afternoon.
Oh, hey.
You can tell people to what? Walk by sight and not faith.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely. I'm sorry. Yeah, let me. I didn't realize. I didn't know whether I was on or not. But yes, I am. yes, I am. This is Mandisa Thomas, president and one of the founders of Black Nonbelievers Incorporated. And yes, we walk by sight, not faith. And that also, yes, thank you. That goes into not, you know, it goes into, I like that it goes that way because it also goes into us not just telling people to, you know, we're not here to tell you what to think or, you know, or what you should go by. You go by your own sight for many is subjective, and you have the right to find that for yourself. So it is, you know, it is a journey that is encouraged to be developed, you know, not just by yourself, but also with the help of others who are sort of like-minded, but we don't always have to agree on the same things or the same premises, but for people that are just encouraging you to be progressive in itself.
Exactly. And to also let you know, you're definitely not alone out here. Mm-hmm. You are not alone. And, again, if you reach out to us, we definitely will reach back to you. And we will find resources for you. We will direct you to the people that can assist you. And if you have questions, we can answer these questions. You know, we're definitely reachable. We're touchable. All of that. So we just kind of want to let you guys know that, again, you know, we do care. We really, really, truly do care. And our call-in number, and the only reason why I'm announcing this is because I believe this is going to be a hot-button show. The show normally lasts 2 hours, but I have the option of adding an additional hour toward the end, which is called overtime. In order for you to listen in on overtime, you have to call in. So the call-in number is 310-982-4273. Again, that's 310-982-4273. We're not taking calls right now. We want to get through some of this subject matter first, and then we'll open the lines. And today, our series, we're starting our race series, and it's part one, self-hatred and colorism. But before we go into that, I wanted to make a couple of announcements. Again, you know, we're always advocating for mental health care as well as, you know, people getting the physical health care that they need in order to, you know, maintain themselves. And recovering from religion is a wonderful project out there. You all may want to contact them if you need some help. And, again, they'll get you to the correct people. You have the Secular Project out there, which is also another therapy project. It's called a therapy project, you know, the Secular Therapy Project. Look that up. The information is on my wall. I'll post it again sometime this week. And they have a lot of projects out there. I would encourage you guys to get involved in, you know, to kind of explore what's out there, to kind of help you if you need help or to give the information to other people that may need some additional assistance. CFI, along with the Black Skeptics Group out there in Los Angeles, they'll be having a program Wednesday, September 26th. So you guys, you may want to check that out. It's Debunking Science as Savior. Is Science Infallible? So that should be interesting. They're going to have a panel, and Dr. Hutchinson is the organizer of that group. But you can also speak with Nakomi, the lovely Nakomi, and her and Mario. They have a show every other Friday night. If you all missed their show this last Friday, it was,
that was a great show.
Yeah, very good show. Go and check out the archives. Check them out. They did an absolutely fantastic job. Next week's show is going to be a tandem show. Ms. Raina has a show on Saturday, and, you know, of course, this show is on Sunday, and we both will be talking about conspiracy theories. So we'll be talking about that for 2 days. We'll be discussing the Illuminati and the New World Order. So that should be interesting. We'll be looking at it from a number of different perspectives, but it should be an interesting show. So, again, next Saturday and Sunday, conspiracy theories. Specifically talking about NWO and the Illuminati. And there are other topics that we'll discuss in the future, but just wanted to kind of give you all a little caveat there. That's the direction that we're headed in. But anyway, be in. On September 8th, Saturday, September 8th, you guys will be having a voters forum and book drive, correct?
Yes, that is correct. We... in conjunction with Worldwide Books, as well as the Gwinnett Understanding Secular Truths, the Fayette Freethought Society, and Humanists of Georgia, we will have a panel discussion about the importance of voting in this, especially this upcoming election, and voting in general, and why the secular vote is important. And we will be collecting books at the event as well as beforehand. You can email me at mandisa@blacknonbelievers.org. for more information as to where you can deliver the books before the event takes place if you cannot be there in person. And this will take place at the downtown library branch, the central branch, central headquarters branch in downtown Atlanta from 1 to 3 p.m. And it's sure to be a great time and very informative for everyone. And we do have a Halloween party coming up October 27th and a New Year's Eve party coming up in the works, in addition to our general meetings every third Sunday of the month. But, yes, we're definitely having a book drive, and that's sure to be a great and huge event.
Excellent. Fantastic. And I guess I may as well tell the information about Black Nonbelievers of Chicago. We meet every first Sunday, and we've been meeting out at the Bridgeport Arts Center, courtesy of one of our members, Miss Eunice, who is an artist. And every third Friday of the month, she has an art show, and I'll be posting that information. Beautiful young lady, and, you know, we appreciate her generosity. And the next project coming up for Black Nonbelievers of Chicago is we will be putting together a program teaching nonviolent techniques. So when we go up here and we start talking with people and meeting with people and we meet resistance, we'll know how to react in a nonviolent manner. So it should be interesting, you know, definitely, so that we can get out here and start interacting with people. So, again, we welcome you, and we thank you guys. It's been wonderful. This past year and a half, I couldn't ask for anything more than this. But let's go ahead and let's see here. We have Raina here.
Oh, I'm sorry, guys. I pressed the one by mistake. I was trying to get out of my car. Sorry.
No problem.
Put me back on hold. I'll hold you.
Okay. All right, so there you go, guys. So, yeah, let's get into the subject matter. I've been sitting on this for a while as far as doing a race theory because it's extremely broad. But in addition to that, this can get very heated, very emotional, and I wanted to make sure that we handled this as delicately as possible. But we also wanted to make sure that we positioned ourselves so that people can call in and give their opinions and give their perspectives. But we also want to educate you as well. So that's the reason why I'm saying we're not going to take calls for a while. We want to get through some of this material so that you can kind of understand what's happening. And I'm also going to bring this material more so from a global perspective, because, unfortunately, from, you know, my experience from talking with people, a lot of people believe that these issues are basically exclusive to Americans, or in particular, Black Americans. And that's not the truth. And I wanted to dispel some of that today. And we'll talk about it, but before we go on, let's just go ahead and define some of the terminology, okay? So I'm going to define self-hatred. I'm going to give you a couple of definitions and some examples. Self-hatred, a feeling of intense dislike for oneself. That's one definition of self-hatred. Another definition of self-hatred, or even self-loathing. You know, because it kind of goes hand in hand, but another, you know, definition is an example here. Some people feel that, you know, if you experience self-hate, it's turned into guilt. And some people feel that self-hate is also turned into depression. I've heard many different, you know, definitions or examples of it. And I just think it's important that, you know, we talk about these things and we understand exactly, you know, what's happening and what it means. Self-loathing. Self-loathing is an extreme self-hatred of one's own self, actions, or one's ethnic or demographic background. A description of self-loathing is also known as autophobia or self-hatred. So, you know, it's kind of synonymous there. But it says here that self-loathing is a thought pattern where individuals believe they are inferior, bad, worthless, unlovable, or incompetent. And, you know, I can take that and run in so many different directions, and especially tying it to religion, in which you are taught that you are wretched, that you are filthier than a dirty rag. And, you know, it's just... it's absolutely amazing the harm that has been done from the self-loathing, self-hatred that we have for ourselves, and sometimes how we project that onto others. And we really need to work on that. You know, I've spoken before about how we need to do some self-healing. We definitely need to work on some of these things and move forward, because that's the only way we're going to be able to move forward. And I don't know, it's just, it has to get better. It has to get better, but I believe that opening this up to discussion definitely is moving us in the right direction. Some examples of the use of the hatred is from Glow the Mill. I'm just going to give you some examples that I see here online. And one here is, she has a lot of anger inside, suppressed anger, as well as a serious amount of self-hatred. Another example, he had caused enormous harm to the community, and his self-hatred and anger had exacted a terrible toll on his victims. And that came from New Zealand, and that came from the young man that went to that camp and shot and killed all of those young people there. Another example here is by Brian Adler. He let self-hatred gnaw within him as he eased himself into the hired BMW, and that came from somewhere east of life. And, I mean, there are a number of examples here. Another one here is, in the absence of an ideological alternative, the prevailing mood seems to be one of apologetic self-hatred. That came from Spike. And, again, a number of different examples have, been given over the years. And, you know, there are different types of manifestation of, you know, the self-hate. You know, there are a lot of things that we need to deal with. For example, the brainwashing versus nurturing, the hostility versus humility, intimidation versus discussion. And I'm pretty sure we've all had some examples of that in our lives. And, you know, dealing with, again, another example, the internalized racism. And one is asking just, you know, what may be internalized racism, and some would say that it's just basically, you know, something that happens within a society where racial prejudice thrives in politics, communities, institutions, and pop culture. And sometimes it's difficult for racial minorities to avoid absorbing the racist messages that are constantly bombarding us. So, you know, there are a lot of different examples and stereotypes that come from, you know, the internalized racism. And it's just interesting because we project that onto one another. And it's not just, you know, blacks. You know, you have Latinos, you have Asians, you have, you know, Africans, you know, a lot of different people that are dealing with, you know, these particular issues. And before I go on, let me go on and define colorism. Colorism is a practice of discrimination by which those with lighter skin are treated more favorably than those with darker skin. In the African-American community, this traditionally played out via the paper bag test. Those lighter than a standard paper lunch bag were allowed entry into fraternities, sororities, other realms of black upper-class life. White dark-skinned blacks were excluded. While dark-skinned blacks were excluded. An example of that was Spike Lee's movie School Days. And, you know, not only with the sororities and fraternities, you have other organizations like Jack and Jill. And, you know, there are a lot of, you know, the Bull, you know, there are a lot of examples of that. And some people consider the Bull as a fraternity, but that's not necessarily what they consider themselves. They consider themselves more so a brotherhood. Another example of colorism is an old children's rhyme that captures the definition in a nutshell. And here is the rhyme. If you're black, stay back. If you're brown, stick around. If you're yellow, you're mellow. If you're white, you're all right. So basically, in sum, colorism refers to discrimination based on skin color. Colorism disadvantages dark-skinned people while privileging those with lighter skins. And again, it says here that research has linked colorism to smaller incomes, lower marriage rates, longer prison terms, fewer job prospects for dark-skinned people, and what's more, colorism has existed for centuries both in and outside of black America. that makes it a persistent form of discrimination that should be fought with the same urgency that racism is. So, again, just some examples here. You know, I have a lot more to bring to you today, but I kind of wanted to kind of give you all some idea, you know, as to what we're dealing with. And someone in the chat room said race is nothing more than a human concept. Exactly. It's a social construct. Race definitely is a social construct. But for those of you, when you have the opportunity, go out to my page on Facebook, and it's a couple of links out there. There's one in particular, Race, Racism, and the Law. And it gives you some insight into some data and research regarding how dark-skinned people get longer sentences, harsher penalties, so on and so forth. But again, so let's try to get into some of the meat of the bone, meat and bones of the conversation here. And again, I want to tackle this more from a global standpoint so that, again, we can get a better understanding how this happens in other countries with other cultures as well. So, you know, you hear people saying about how blacks and, in some cases, Latinos can be self-hating. It happens in the Jewish community. It happens in the white community in this country as well as other countries. I mean, you know, if you go and you do a Google search on self-hating Jews, you'll find it. If you do a search on self-hating whites, you'll find some examples. And they especially like to pick on the tanning lady, as well as, you know, some people of other cultures that are paying money to get the full lips now, to get the full buttocks and, you know, things of that nature. You know, what we used to once be teased, mocked, and ridiculed about, now other people see as a sign of beauty. Personally, I believe they saw it as a sign of beauty even then, but because it did not occur naturally, the number one way to make them feel better for not being able to have those particular marks of beauty was they mocked and ridiculed the other people. So it's just interesting, you know, how we've evolved, and we have so much, you know, more to do within our particular, you know, community as well as in the world. But, you know, let's give a few examples now. Let's talk about Latin America, okay? So, in Latin America, particularly Mexico and Brazil especially, basically, light skin, you know, people with lighter skin, they have more opportunities. And what I mean by that is they have greater opportunities and access to education, their health care, you know, there are a lot of income disparities. In those particular countries, light skin is considered more attractive. It represents power and wealth. And I want you all to zero in on power and wealth because that seems to be the common denominator in a lot, in all of this. You know, I can't say a lot. In every example that I'm going to give you today, power and wealth seems to be the central thing. In Brazil in particular, people with dark skin are discriminated against disproportionately. People with lighter skin, they're given more privilege and they have more of a social status, so they have a higher social status. Beauty and wealth is attributed to light skin. And the people who are darker in color or darker in hue, they are in general poor and disenfranchised. And, you know, also over in those particular countries, they're having the great hair debate as well. So, again, the issues with the, you know, the relaxing of the hair or wearing your hair natural, they're having those debates over in those countries as well. So, again, you know, that was talking a little bit about, you know, Latin America in particular, Mexico and Brazil, because a lot of people don't know that there are black Mexicans. There are parts of Mexico in which they are of darker hues. Do a little bit of research. You'll find out because, again, the slave trade was not just relegated to America and certain parts of Europe, but it was in Latin America, South America as well. So do some research. You know, again, I encourage you guys to research everything that we're talking about and learn for yourself. It's so much more than what I'm giving you. You know, I'm just kind of, you know, giving some small examples, and I want to make sure that you're learning something from this. And in particular, I want Americans to understand, especially Black Americans, that this does not just happen here. This is happening globally. So, you know, do not allow the media or anyone else to make you feel as though this is an isolated incident. It's not. So, basically, so that was Latin America. Let's talk about South Asia. And from my understanding, from what I read, that the colorism that they deal with in South Asia, this was happening before the Europeans invaded, if you will. And, of course, it continued after the Europeans invaded that particular region. But basically, darker indigenous Indians, and when I say South Asian, I'm talking about India in particular, that the darker indigenous Indians were relegated to positions of servitude. And basically, when the British went to that particular region, it just fueled it even more. So it's like it added, you know, fire or added fuel to that particular fire there. And over in India, they have the caste system, you know. And, again, do some more research on it from, you know, what I've read. You know, you had the tribal organizations, and during the tribal organizations, that was also when they separated the light versus the dark and heralded and uplifted the dark, I'm sorry, the light, people with the light complexions there. So just do some research on this, and from my understanding that this was happening as they formed their different society, that the people with the light skin basically were given priority, were given special privileges. And also Harvard and MIT did some research. They did some studies over in India, and I guess they took 1 million genetic markers to kind of get an understanding of the caste system over there. So, again, that information is definitely out there, and I would encourage you to go and do some research. In the chat room, Ralph, he said, why this happened historically, he can understand. But the question is how it gets internalized, if it does, among Black kids who were born in the post-apartheid era. And that's actually a great point. You know, how does it get internalized? And I can only speak from what I've had to deal with over in this particular country, in America, when you have the majority of the television shows and commercials in which they're showing only Europeans, maybe one or two, you know, people of African descent or African Americans, and very few of a darker complexion. And again, with the stereotypes that are played out, with the information that is communicated to us through the media, I can see how it can be internalized by some young people. And again, even within our own community, you know, there are some people within the African American community in which people with a lighter skin will only date and procreate with people of a lighter skin so that they can keep their family or their bloodline light. And it happens quite often. There have been books written about it. There is research out there about it as well. And we kind of project that onto one another. You know, you'll hear some kids teasing or even some adults making comments about other adults or other children, calling them Black or, you know, just horrible derogatory examples out there. So that's how it becomes, you know, internalized. And for those of you that don't know, Ralph is a professor, so he already understands this and he knows this. He has studied this for decades. And his website is over at autodidact.com. So check him out. He has a lot of beautiful examples and information over there that can help you out with this type of information. But to go back over here to South Asia, for some of the examples. Again, we talked about the caste system, C-A-S-T-E. Look that up, and so that you can get a better understanding of that. Over there, many of them practice a religion called Hinduism. And from what I've read, Hinduism tends to be color neutral. So they don't necessarily favor dark skin, nor do they favor light skin. And if you go and you look at their particular god, who's called Krishna, Krishna was dark and beautiful. And actually, at one point in time, they thought that dark was absolutely beautiful. So for those of you that have studied Hinduism, I encourage you to, you know, inform us, educate us a little bit more about it, because I don't know a lot about Hinduism. I've been doing some reading, and I would be more than happy to read any materials or information or books that you could recommend. But, yeah, Hinduism, from my understanding, is color neutral. But in South Asia, again, you know, for the lighter skin or the lighter complexion, that represented, again, status and wealth. And, again, I want you all to remember that pretty much is the common denominator between all of these different countries, you know, status and wealth, power and wealth, and the lighter skin. So that is a common denominator. We can also talk about over there in Arabia, in which white is considered beauty. And, you know, they have color scales over there. And you can go and look that up, and pretty much goes from white to light tan to golden to a wine color to light black to green to blue. And, again, look that information up. It's a lot to learn. And, you know, I believe that you truly would be educated because, again, you know, I just want to keep drilling this into your head that this is not exclusive to America. And many people would have you believing that, and that's not true. Other countries are experiencing the same thing, even over in East Asia, you know, pretty much, and this is including Southeast Asia as well, you know, over in China and Japan, you know, they prefer lighter skin. You know, again, Hong Kong, the Philippines, Malaysia, South Korea, you know, and different countries like that, you know, I have some South Korean associates. And, you know, some of them, you know, dye their hair blonde or very light red. Many of them want to change the contours of their eyes so that it's no longer slanted. They want the wide eyes. They want the doe eyes. And they wear the contact lenses. Just a lot of different things that are happening, and just kind of let you know that they have skin whitening creams and pills, just different products out there. And it is an $18 billion market just in East Asia alone. Just in East Asia alone. So, again, you know, drilling it home to let you guys know that this is happening across the board. It's just not discussed as much as far as coming from other countries. And, again, white skin is a sign of wealth and power. I want you all to get that, wealth and power. So, you know, in some of their ancient drawings, the pale skin depicted the goddesses and the gods and the people of extreme wealth. Just go out there. The research is out there. The information definitely is out there. And I encourage you guys, again, like I say, to go and to learn more about these things. And over in Africa, they're having these same issues over in Africa. They have the skin bleaching, skin whitening. You know, you have the products and the peels, especially the creams and things of that nature. And, you know, over in South Africa, you know, light skin, again, social status and privilege. And, you know, again, they had four categories of people. They had black, white, colored, and Indians. And the difference between the blacks and the colors is the colored people did not have to carry what's called a dompa, which was kind of like over here in this country with the Jim Crow laws, in which you had to have your identification card. So that's pretty much what that is there. But the colored people did not have to carry one, but the blacks did. And again, it's about social status and privilege. Social status and privilege. You guys, you know, keep that in mind. You know, so the lighter skin, social status and privilege. Over in Angola, the Portuguese, you know, are considered, you know, the elite in that particular country. And, again, they're better educated. They have more access to resources. They have better educational as well as professional opportunities. Yet the Europeans only represent 1% of the population. So, you know, they disproportionately have more influence than the dark people, than the people with the dark skin. Another example here from Africa would be Liberia. And for those of you who are not familiar with a lot of American history, some of the American slaves, when they were freed, and even some of the ones that, you know, took their oppressors to court and won their freedom, you know, through the judicial system, many of them went over to Liberia. And when they went to Liberia, in some cases, oppressed the indigenous Africans that were there. But then they created a social class in which the light skin, again, was heralded as superior. And some of their first presidents, their first leaders, were definitely more of a European influence, more European looking. So, again, you know, go and read your history. Understand the history. They had a couple of political parties over there. The Republican Party primarily consisted of people of lighter skin, and the True Whig Party primarily consisted of people of darker skin. And, again, definitely I want you all to do some research on how some of the American descendants, the Native Africans, you know, it definitely will open your eyes to a lot of what happened over there. So, again, you know, we covered several different countries and some issues with colorism, and we are quite familiar with what's happening over here in America. And I left America last on purpose because I wanted you guys to have a better understanding and as to how this affects many people, many different cultures, many different countries, and so that you can get a better understanding, because it's important that we know that, again, this is not necessarily exclusive to Black America. It just seems as though, in many cases, anything negative is kind of attributed to us, and we need to work on our particular self-esteem. We need to work on the inferiority complexes that seem to be ingrained in us. And it's sad and it's unfortunate. And, you know, what's even more disheartening and upsetting about it is we seem to be, and when I say we, I'm just speaking in general, we seem to project it on one another. We seem to continue this very vicious cycle, and it needs to come to a head. But in order to do that, we need to talk about these things, not only, you know, amongst one another, around the kitchen table, because that's pretty much the biggest secret. No one really wants to talk about this publicly. They want us to keep it quiet, talk about it with each other, talk about it, you know, around the kitchen table, kind of, you know, whisper about it, but we need to bring it out to the forefront, because I truly believe before we can tackle any really major racial issues, we need to deal with the internalized racism. But again, that's just my opinion. And, you know, again, let's talk a little bit about the history of colorism in this particular country. Some examples, again, we talked earlier about the brown paper bag test, and to a certain extent, that's still kind of happening. It's kind of unspoken, but it does still happen. And, you know, it's just, it's interesting. Other examples equal the Calm test and the pencil test. The Calm test tested the coarseness of your hair. So if you could not run a comb through your hair without it catching, then you have failed the comb test. The pencil test is another one out there. You have the flashlight test. The flashlight test, I mean, the pencil test is the same thing as the comb test. If you didn't have a comb around, they would run the pencil through your hair. So I wanted to make sure I clarified that. The flashlight test basically is a test in which a person's profile to make sure their features measured up or were close enough to those of the Caucasian race. So, you know, it's interesting. Another example, the bleaching syndrome. The process of attempting to lighten one's skin. I'm sure that many of you have gone into, you know, beauty supply stores. You know, you can even find this at your regular retail stores in which they have creams that will lighten your skin. There's medication, there are pills that, you know, a physician can prescribe in which can help you with that if that's what you choose to do. And it's just, it's interesting. But again, it's about the dominant cultures defining and standardizing what they consider as beauty. And some of it is about us wanting to assimilate into the dominant culture or American society. And, you know, I'm starting to see some changes within our particular community. And some of the changes are absolutely positive. And, you know, I'm pretty happy about that. You know, we have to get better at this. But, yeah, you know, it's just we have to talk about it. We must talk about these things. We must address it. And I believe we just have to grow from, you know, this. I see Mandisa's back on the line here. And, and again, you know, we've come a long way. We have a long way to go. And I just wanted to give some examples of, you know, what's happening and what's plaguing us in this country. And not only in this country, in other, you know, countries as well, we definitely need to deal with the skin paradox and deal with the stereotypes and, you know, yeah, and again, media and the public perception. Because just because you see it on television, in a sitcom or a commercial or even the news, that does not necessarily mean that it's true. So we have to do better about breaking down those stigmas and overcoming those stigmas and those stereotypes. And it's just important that we're able to kind of move on and do these things. And we have to break down that negative perception, not only within, you know, our own African-American community, but also other communities that have bought into that as well. And we also have to work at the negative perceptions we have of other cultures. You know, again, you know, some of the negative comments that I've heard from other people about, you know, Latinos and mestizos is that they think that they're less intelligent because many of them speak with an accent or don't speak English at all. Don't fool yourself. Many of them are highly intelligent. Just like in our particular community, again, you know, we've been sold that we are inferior. We've been, you know, dealing with an inferiority complex for so long. You know, we were believing these things. I remember when that book, The Bell Curve, came out, in which it said that, you know, blacks and minorities fell beneath the bell curve. That's not necessarily true. Again, you know, picking up on something that Einstein said, if you criticize a fish for not being able to basically climb a tree, that fish will feel that it's a failure, even though it may be a genius at swimming. You know, that's not the quote verbatim, but it's kind of going in that same particular direction there. But again, you know, if you have a child or children or other people in your life, if they're particularly talented in one area, cultivate that. Cultivate that child and cultivate that talent, you know. And again, you know, we should be uplifting one another. We should be working together, not only within our community, but with other cultures as well. But anyway, I am going to open the telephone lines now, and we will be taking calls shortly. But the telephone guest call-in number is 310-982-4273. Again, 310-982-4273. And, you know, again, talk a little bit more about the self-loathing or stinking thinking or the lack of self-esteem. You know, basically it's the hatred of one's own self, actions and characteristics, rejection of one's demographic origin, such as ethnic origin, religious orientation, nationality, gender, or sexual orientation. And it says here that self-loathing is common among people who grew up in an unsupportive family environment where there was child abuse, neglect, emotional trauma, or chronic criticism. And again, I want to drive home, chronic criticism, neglect, emotional trauma, child abuse, and in particular, an unsupportive family environment. We have to do better. We definitely have to do better. Says here, some of the symptoms of self-loathing include chemical dependency, alcohol and drug abuse, self-harm, self-destructive promiscuity, fits of rage and dissociation. And, you know, you all hear us talking all the time about the, you know, drug, alcohol, sex, food, addictions, where they're coming from. Here are some more examples of it again. You know, I want to read it one more time. Symptoms of self-loathing, including chemical dependency, alcohol and drug abuse, self-harm, self-destructive promiscuity, fits of rage and dissociation. You know, here it says self-loathing may be intermittent and may be suddenly triggered by disappointments, struggles, painful memories, or anxiety about the future. These triggers can create an overwhelming flood of feelings of hopelessness, worthlessness, powerlessness in an individual who suffers from a personality disorder, which can lead to self-destructive behaviors, emotional withdrawals, or aggressive behaviors toward loved ones and family members. And we have to include strangers as well, because I've seen people project that into people that they don't know just because that person just happened to be there at the time. Some examples of self-loathing are, you know, nobody loves me, things will never get any better, I'm useless, I always screw everything up, he or she could never really love the real me. So, again, just some examples. I kind of want you guys to know, you know, what's kind of stringing all of this together. And, again, do some research. Do some self-reflection. It's just as important, you know, not only us collectively, but people individually. I just think it's important that you understand that, you know, it does affect you, and it affects the people around you. And in many cases, even if you don't outwardly express it, if you believe that, you know, internally, it does come out. It does come out in a number of different ways. And someone in the chat room says this affects all cultures. Exactly. Exactly. You're exactly correct. And that's why I've been trying to, you know, state that throughout this entire program, that it affects everybody. You know, not only the black culture or the Latino culture or the Asian culture, it also affects the white culture as well. So, you know, again, we need to talk about this, but I feel that we need to talk about some of the self-hating issues and the colorism before we can really tackle some of the greater racial issues that are out there, which will be coming up in a future show. I believe it will be the third show in which we will open it up and start talking about discrimination and prejudice and racism, you know, in general. But, yeah, so definitely, you know, again, the telephone number is 310-982-4273. Again, 310-982-4273. I am now ready to accept calls. And we have Alfred on the line. And, Mandy, you're back on the line, too, if you didn't know.
How you doing?
I am
good.
On the line here. It's just that, you know, I have to kind of put a noise in the background. So, but, yes, I am still here.
Okay. And I wanted to let you know that I brought you back live. But,
oh,
Alfred, welcome. Yeah.
Alfred,
for you who aren't familiar with Alfred, Alfred has a blog TV show called Dragnet, and he is simulcasting our show today on his blog TV, and he also will be simulcasting with us next week when we discuss conspiracy theories. So Alfred is now part of the Black Freethinkers family.
Yes, indeed.
Yes, sir. So what are your thoughts on the colorism and the self-hatred and the self-loathing?
Well, I can personally attest to the self-loathing and the self-hate. Growing up in Louisiana, you know, pretty much anyone, you know, that looks like me, I guess I could say, that would go into a an area like southern Mississippi, me being Creole, lighter skin, going into an area where the majority of African Americans there are like at least 50 shades darker, will have to experience some self-loathing because, well, you have this, I call it the Vin Diesel effect, where, you know, I am too dark for the white folks, but I'm too light for the black folks. Because he spoke of that in one of his biographies, and I thought that was very interesting. But of course, you feel like you're the only one who feels that way, but that's certainly not the case. It's more widespread. And, you know, I grew up with that for the longest, moving around to different areas, speaking differently and being a different, or I guess a unique skin tone than everyone else. But I started to notice a trend as I got into middle school where the lighter skin African Americans were favored over the more darker skin ones. So it's kind of an evolution in thought, because now I see, especially some of my younger cousins, try to claim any and all of their ethnicities, you know, whether it may be just, you know, me being French Creole, as African and French. Well, they'll try to claim, you know, well, I have Irish and African and Jamaican and Native American, and this is a new cool thing to do, I guess. But I see what the idea is behind it, but they're still putting the focus on this too prideful of a background that this social construct that we have of race and ethnicity is still going to disenfranchise someone who is not of the flavor of the month.
Excellent, excellent. And then I have a question for you. I already know the answer to this question, but I want you to explain to just the general audience the fundamental difference between Creole and Cajun.
Okay, Creole, it's been used interchangeably. Technically, if you are to be considered Creole, you have to be at least third generation of African and French heritage. It's not just being, well, you're what folks call mixed now. You have to be at least third generation of African and French heritage. Now, that could be any range of skin tones, but the differences from a Cajun, well, it's more of a colloquialism than an actual definition if you would ask anyone in that community. But, you know, a Cajun can be anyone of, you know, French descent. Some mulattoes claim to be Cajun, but it's mostly folks of the French Canadian descent, or I think of the other one, but it's the Cajuns that I've spoken to, is if you are of French Canadian descent, for the ones that migrated from Canada and just settled down into Red Stick, you know, Baton Rouge area. So you could, just like your Arcadia Parish, you know, you would be considered Cajun, but, you know, you can use either one interchangeably. So mostly, you know, if you are white, you would be considered Cajun, and you're black, you would be considered Creole.
Exactly, exactly. Very good. I just wanted people to understand that, you know, even within, you know, our particular, you know, African communities or African-American communities, there are even further distinctions out there. And, you know, I just wanted to kind of bring that, you know, to the forefront there, because a lot of people do not necessarily understand the fundamental differences between a Cajun and a Creole. So thank you for that, you know, explaining that to people. And again, you know, I would tell you to go and definitely look that up and do some research on this. And again, you know, great conversation going on in the chat room there. And, you know, these are things that we truly, truly need to address and work on. If we're ever really going to make any real progress, we need to deal with some of the internalized issues that we're having. And we have actually another caller on the line from 323. May we ask who's calling?
Vita Starr.
Hey, Vita, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. I just wanted to comment. Well, I kind of want to share an experience that kind of like woke me up on how we treat children. And I mean, I've always, like, my parents were really conscious of making sure that, you know, I didn't have any internalized issues with, you know, being darker than some of my family and all of that. But when I was working through an after school program in Watts, and I used to have high school volunteers would come from Jordan High School to the elementary school that I worked at, and they would volunteer as mentors to the elementary school students. And during the group time, like when everybody's all together as a big group, I would notice there were these particular group of black girls. They were all dark-skinned girls that would favor the light-skinned girls that were in the light-skinned children that were in the group. So my high school volunteers would favor my elementary school students that were light-skinned. In particular, there were these two particular girls. They were both biracial, half black, half Mexican. And they had really long hair, and they would, like, fawn over their hair and talk about how cute they were in front of the other kids. And I remember, like, I had to pull them to the side and say, look, you know, if you're going to compliment the kids, that's fine. But you compliment one, you have to compliment the other. And also I had a discussion with them about, you know, what they were doing a little bit deeper. Because at first I was going to just do it from a program manager perspective, like, you know, that's inappropriate, how you work with the kids, blah, blah, blah. But as I was talking to them, I noticed that they didn't even realize it. They didn't even realize what they were doing. Like, it didn't even occur to them that they were favoring the light-skinned girls. Like, and in the conversation even, they were talking about how they had good hair and how the girls had good hair, but they themselves had bad hair. And they tried to, like, explain to me why. And they had never even heard of the paper bag test. They had never even heard of they never even knew that that was an issue. Like, it was just such a regular thing for them, and that blew my mind. That was kind of like life changing for me.
Right. And it happens more often. Again, that goes back to that internalized, you know, and the, you know, racism and the projection, and it's passed down generation to generation. And you know, we have to stop it. So I'm glad that you brought it to their attention and you explained, you know, what they were doing and why they were doing, you know, certain things. And I believe that's part of the process, part of the healing process, if we're going to try to move forward and heal one another. And we have to be able to recognize it, number one, and then be able to address it, you know, respectfully or as respectfully as possible, but be able to educate people as to what they're doing, why they're doing certain things, and the general effects of these, you know, different behaviors. But I'm glad, you know, but, you know, what was the response after that? Did you notice a change, Vita?
Yes. Hello?
Yeah, yes.
I'm sorry.
I started
reading the chat room, so I kind of missed the last thing you said. I just heard Siobhan. I heard Vita.
Yeah, did you notice a positive change? Did they change their behavior?
After the conversation, I think they were a little more conscious of it, but I noticed that they were really careful not to do it because I was there. I don't know how much of it they really understood and took in. because I was trying my best to not be too preachy. I mean, they're teenagers, so you still have to kind of, you know, come at them a certain way so they don't become all offended and defensive. But I know the behavior changed somewhat only because I was there, so I don't know how much they took in, you know, and took home and thought about. I hope they did, because I don't think they even realized it until I brought it up, like this is an issue.
Exactly, exactly. And so, you know, again, from what, you know, you explained there, they didn't even realize what they were doing. So, you know, I'm looking at the community as a whole. What happened to history? Why aren't we teaching our children the history and to understand things like this with the colorism and the self-hatred and just how that basically in our particular community, some of the issues came from slavery in which, and, you know, I really don't like to open this discussion up a lot to that because, again, it just opens up a really, really big debate. But, you know, it has to be discussed. It has to be discussed. But in slavery times, the majority of the people who were of a dark complexion worked in the fields. And many of the slaves or the slaves' children that were of a light complexion worked in the house. And many of the children that were, many of the people that worked in the house that were of a light complexion, many of them were the slave master's children in which they procreated with some of the slaves or, you know, their grandchildren or what have you. So, you know, that wasn't necessarily always the case, but for the most part it was. And we definitely need to be teaching our children this history. We need to be teaching them the history. We need to show them, point out different examples. And even on my Facebook page, I put up some clips of some movies and the links to some other movies that talks about shadism, that talks about colorism, that talks about these different issues with the self-hatred. And maybe we need to re-educate ourselves first. We need to re-educate ourselves and then pass that information along because if we don't teach these children, teach these younger generations what's happening, they are going to continue to perpetuate, you know, these issues. And it seems as though each subsequent generation, just from my observation, is getting worse because, you know, never had I ever seen, you know, a lot of people wanting, especially in the minority community, wanting plastic surgery, wanting to get their noses reduced, wanting to thin out their lips, wanting, again, to change their skin color. But then on the other side, you know, again, this affects all cultures. You know, I'm seeing people of European descent basically wanting, you know, a bigger bottom, a bigger butt, wanting fuller lips, you know, darkening their skin, you know, It's interesting, and, you know, I believe
can
that
I
it
jump
affects
in?
All of us. Yes, you may, please.
So I kind of, even looking not only at the physical, you know, how we go about our skin tone and skin color, I think there's an issue in our education system, and even talking about slavery or, you know, oppression and how it's discussed in school. Because I remember learning about slavery and oppression, and you don't really learn much about the actual history of African Americans or of Africans or black people around the world, you know? You don't really hear much. You hear, you know, you were slaves, you were brutalized, like, you were victims the entire time in history. Whenever I look at my history books when I was in high school, all I knew was that we were victims, we were dumb, we were, you know, treated badly. And I didn't really learn about any uprisings. I don't know about, like, maybe one. You know, like, you don't hear about all the different things of, you know, black Africans and, black Americans fighting and winning. You don't hear too much about that. It's always about, you know, how horrible we are, how victimized we are. So I think a part of our learning has to change. And we're also taught to honor, you know, white historical figures that weren't all that great. You know, like, we have to honor George Washington, who owned slaves. We have to honor Thomas Jefferson, and this is what we're taught in school. So I think it's even deeper than just, oh, I don't like the way my skin color is. It's I think I hate myself. You know what I mean? I think that's taught me a lot.
Yeah, no, I agree with you wholeheartedly. And again, you know, within any situation in which, you know, there's a battle or a war, the person who wins that particular battle or the war, they write the history. And,
right.
Again, I understand what you're saying there, but, and I agree with you, you know, so I'm not disagreeing with that. But what I'm saying is we personally need to go back and learn the history, you know, of our particular culture, other cultures, and teach it to our children. And as Terry said in the chat room, how are we going to teach something that we don't know or we don't necessarily understand? And I agree with him wholeheartedly. That's the point. And that's the reason why I'm encouraging people to go and do the research. You know, we post a lot of things to our Facebook walls. I'll start posting even more because I've posted information about how the original NHL, the National Hockey League, started with a group of Africans out of Canada. A lot of people don't understand that. They didn't know that. I was teaching them about different history. Even
I didn't know that either, actually.
And Raina, your mic is live. And even with the advent of rock and roll, Ike Turner, Tina's ex-husband, Ike Turner wrote the very first rock and roll song. We started rock and roll. That's why when Tina Turner went into, when she did her solo career, she wanted to do rock and roll because those were her roots. So we got to go back, and we need to teach this history. There's a lot, you know, not just the example with Hockey League and with rock and roll, but there are a lot of other examples in which we created a genre, we created something, and we're not necessarily given the credit. So, even if it's not taught in the books, not taught in history books, we can go back and we can get that information, and knowledge is power. Knowledge is a weapon. We can give our children that information so that when a child goes to school and they're taught one thing in history, then you've taught them something different at home, they can hit the teacher with the knowledge. Blam! Buy your children some books talking about this type of history. It's out there.
You can take them to the library. You don't even have to buy the books.
Exactly.
Library.
You know, on Amazon, Amazon, a pro-LGBT company, you can buy the books sometimes for like a dime. So, I mean, if you buy the books for the dime and pay the $3 in shipping and handling, that's cheaper than catching a bus or driving over to the library, and the child would have the book in their library. So investigate the different opportunities out there as well. I guess that's what I'm saying, in addition to not only going to the library. You can buy the book for a dime or a dollar, or even go to your local thrift stores. You can find some of those books there. Not very many, but, you know, there are some.
Some of the libraries actually sell books, so you can actually buy the books from the library.
Maybe a little too old school for some of the younger generations. Now, you know, if you have a Kindle or something like that, then you gotta upgrade and see. But I doubt something like that will even be on there. Yeah, just like Mark says, you know, nobody really takes their kids to the library anymore. I do.
The library is online too. I mean, libraries have e-books and audiobooks, and I mean for kids, for adults too. I mean, I'm just saying you don't even have to spend any money, technically, to do any of
these
things.
Yeah,
exactly.
I agree.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, I remember we're not talking about the library, but I remember going to the library every week as a child, and we wanted to go. But, again, you know, nowadays many libraries or many children consider libraries outdated. But we have the electronic side here, and, again, you know, someone mentioned Kindle. You can get some of these books for like 99 cents or $1.99 or $2.99 from Amazon and other companies out there. So, you know, again, by the time you drive, you know, 5-6 miles and use a couple of gallons of gas to go to the library, it's just cheaper to download it to the Kindle. And these kids are running around with better computers than most of us. So, so they have the capability to get this information. So, again, the call-in number is 310-982-4273. Again, that's 310-982-4273, and press 1. We have a call. I believe this is Nakomi on the line. Nakomi?
Hola, good morning. Hi, Nicole. Hi, I'm still halfway asleep, y'all. Forgive me. I barely woke up. But I just wanted to talk about preferences that people have when it comes to skin color. Sometimes I'll get into different discussions with family members about, you know, some of my past experiences with, you know, some of the men that I'm attracted to. And, you know, I caught a lot of heat for being attracted to the lighter complexed guys, and it wasn't necessarily because of their complexion. It's just, you know, the features that, you know, they displayed that I was attracted to mainly. And I don't know. I just think that sometimes it can be a little confusing, and people can get too far when it comes to what people are attracted to. So I just wanted to get a little feedback on how some of you guys feel about that. Is that part of the problem when people prefer, you know, someone lighter or darker? You know, I hear it from some of my friends, you know, they prefer dark and bald, you know, the lighter complected guys and stuff. So just trying to get a little feedback on that from some of you.
Well, actually, you remind me of a female friend of mine that I went to high school with, and I correspond with her every other day. And she has, I won't call it an archetype of her men that she wants to date. They have to be bikers. They have to love metal. They have to be white. They have to be, and forgive me for some of you who might be a little prudish, but they have to have at least a 9-inch penis. So it's very, yeah, I thought that was very interesting that she liked that. But she would not deviate from that. I was telling her, like, I know several bikers. I live in California. I understand what their culture is about, you know, not sons of anarchy culture, but actually how they live and what the rules that they live by. And, you know, you want to marry someone like that, it's not the best idea in the world because of how they live and how their philosophy works. So, you know, I was looking into more and more of, you know, why this archetype? You know, why, you know, you're darker than me. You know, how do you not like black men? You were created by one. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, as I kind of delve a little bit more into, you know, she started telling me more and more. I'm not going to, you know, give away anything too specific, but it seemed as though her experiences in life have turned her away from being more open. And so her limited experience with this group of people was, you know, exceptional. So she just kind of fell into it. And this is what now she desires, and this is her ideal fantasy of her ideal person. But like I had to tell her, like, I would love to have a big breasted Asian woman to be my, you know, lawfully wedded wife, but that's what I thought I wanted. I ended up finding somebody who was darker than me, who actually is so much more better than the ideal person that I imagined, that I couldn't have even fathom being with her because I was so fixated upon my ideal image of a mate. So I'm not sure, you know, it has to be something in our society that drives us toward these specific preferences and away from just, you know, certain characteristics that we would like in a mate or just in a friend or partner.
Excellent. You know, someone in the chat room said that people call it preferences so that others won't attack it because it's a preference. And at the end of the day, it's a conscientious decision made by an individual. And this has been happening for a while. And if that person is attracted to, you know, a particular set of people, you know, that's what they're attracted to. The question is, why? Is that truly what they're attracted to, or is that what they've been told to be attracted to? Because, again, I've seen different forms.
Or are they rationalizing, or are they attempting to rationalize the prejudice that they have by calling it preference rather, you know, than what it really is? You know, so you have to look at it, you know, realistically.
Yeah, it's interesting because I had a conversation with one of my neighbors recently, and he, you know, he's a darker, complexed guy, and he went on to explain why it is that he preferred light-skinned women. And, you know, they just display, you know, in a roundabout way, he was trying to say that they display a different type of beauty than darker-skinned girls. And for me, you know, because at first I was kind of with him on a few things. And because me personally, I don't see it as a matter of color. I mean, even growing up, you know, I used to get teased for liking the lighter complexion guys, but it had more to do with what I was actually attracted to about their features. You know what I mean? It wasn't that I did not date darker complexion guys or brown skin guys or something like that. But, you know, my family members would tease me on that, and I'm like, why do I have to be judged because, you know, I'm more attracted to, I guess, quote unquote, what they would call back then the pretty boys, which my attraction over time changed as I got older. But you know, just for me, I didn't really trip about, you know, that person's color like that. And sometimes I just think people get confused because, you know, somebody may just not necessarily even prefer, but they just find themselves attracted to, you know, a certain type of people. Like me, it's about the features. I could care less about the color of, you know, somebody's skin, but it's just a matter of what is it about their features that actually draws me to them. And, you know, because I don't think not every light-skinned person is attractive just simply because they're light-skinned. I've seen some not-so-attractive light-skinned people as well as some dark-skinned people. So, I don't know. I think it, you know, it goes a little bit deeper with some people depending on how they're explaining, you know, what they like and why they like what they like. But, you know, for him, I think it was a matter of just preferring light-skinned women over dark-skinned women just because he saw a different type of beauty in them.
Okay. Hey. He likes it. I love it. You know, we have another caller. Let's bring on another caller from area code 601. 601. May we ask who's calling?
Hey, Kim. This is Eric Teamer.
Hey, Eric. Welcome.
Hey, how you doing? I was just listening in, and I just decided to go ahead and press 1 and jump in on the conversation if I can.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, I had 3 points, but I wrote down 2, and I was trying to remember 3, but I forgot 3. Anyway, a lot of what you know, this is one of my favorite topics. So a lot of what you're talking about, I think a lot of people need to understand that the biggest part to this is it's psychological. A lot of what we go through is psychological.
Yeah.
You can't ask these questions without looking at the aspects of how they manipulated our mindset on a psychological level, because there's
exactly.
No way that you can wipe out a group of people's history, or I won't even say wipe out, I'll say hide. You misplace, hide, whitewash, whatever term you want to put on it, that label of history, and then you remove the history, and then you tell these group of people you have no culture, no history. As far as you're concerned, you know, this is where your history starts, and that's why if you look at school textbooks, they hit most of the world history and American history textbooks often start out with history around the black people dealing with slavery. It starts there. So you're starting to be conditioned to believe that you were always in a subservient level. You know, so you have that mentality. And I was listening, and someone brought up that issue or asked the question, I guess, in the chat room about where you can go to find your black history. And today, with all, you know, with all the technology that's out there, one of the first places I would always suggest is YouTube, because a lot of our scholars, black scholars, who you would not know, you would not hear in the classroom that someone would teach you in elementary or middle school or high school, they're there. They've been recorded and archived for some purpose or reason. Our black history isn't necessarily hidden or put away to where we can't find it. A lot of times what I've found is it's because they use specific names. For instance, when you talk about, you know, teaching your children, how can I teach my children? You know, and I sit down, and you've heard me say it several times, how can you teach your child that even within the Roman Empire you had black Caesars within the Roman Empire? You can do
that.
Is that funny?
No, I mean, it's funny that I've honestly never heard of that. And I just put in the chat, I'd never heard of Neil Tyson until after I left college. Like,
yeah,
I heard that,
yeah.
You know, no, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but this is really fascinating. Because you do have a point, and I'm actually proving your point right now, because I never heard of that, ever.
Yeah.
And,
well,
you know,
if you look at, for instance, I know if you look it up, and like Kim said, do your research. A lot of times we talk about it, and a lot of people get turned off, and this is part of the psychological aspect that Kim talked about before, about sitting around tables and talking about it in whispers, is because psychologically it's kind of, I guess I want to say, you know, almost in our DNA, where we could not talk about it out loud, so we did talk about it in circles, in small, quiet circles, and now it's at a point where we're almost ashamed to talk about being black. We're ashamed to talk to show our, you know, the ethnic side of us to do these things. It's almost downplayed and it's looked upon as a negative thing. And you talk about looking at historical aspects, and like I said, you know, a Caesar and you know, a black Caesar in the Roman Empire, you know, and you saying you never heard of it. I would wager that you probably have, and you probably have even seen it. If you saw the movie Gladiator with Russell Crowe, they talked about Marcus Aurelius. Marcus Aurelius' father was Servius Septimus. And if you look it up, he was born in a town, I want to say, Lagos. That's an African in Africa. What they do is they don't necessarily come out and call you by name. They are not going to say he was black. They will say that he was from a certain part of a certain land or a certain country. They'll say that he was a Moor. They'll say that he was, part of the burnt-faced people. But they name you by names, and if we're not familiar with these areas, then we don't pick it up. So you see history being repeated, and you see, you know, I guess I will say whitewashed, where you'll see the white face replacing the black face of these people. And, you know, like I said, when you talk about learning where to get this information from, John Hendrick Clark, Dr. John Hendrick Clark was one of the foremost scholars in Pan-African history and African histories and studies. Dr. Ivan Van Sertima, who taught at Rutgers as well, wrote a book called They Came Before Columbus, dealing with the Africans in the Americas long before Columbus, and even discussing how Columbus wrote in his journals how he had passed coming to the Americas, passed black people coming to the Americas, met black people in the West Indies, what is now the West Indies, being told when he got to South America that there were Africans there already, that they had been trading. If you want to know about studies for, like, people who live in New York, Arthur Schoenberg Center for Research is an excellent place to learn about your people, because that's even where Dr. John Hendrick Clark went to learn and study. You're talking about blacks, children, and the effects, the psychological effects of children in schools. Look up Dr. Jawanza Kanjufu, who talks about this. Mm. And some of these things that they were talking about, they were being discussed, how children were being treated like the black child in the schools, and how a lot of them are being shaped and molded in the way they believe it. Back in the early 80s, we just blew it off. A lot of us were blowing it off and blowing off some of the information. So you have these people who are talking about it. You have these lessons that are there. It's just that, you know, there's kind of two factors, the psychological factor of being ashamed to deal with it and not wanting to consciously speak up on it. And then the fact that some of this stuff, information, is hidden in plain sight, it's just been put in a way that we don't recognize it. And instead of really investigating for ourselves, we stopped doing it. And now I remember my third point, because you talked about libraries. And I was going to say, you know, maybe part of it is having your own library inside your own home. And even if it's an e-library, with today's technology, I used to go to the Goodwills and all these other places and pick up books for 25 cents that were just laying around that people had discarded. But the fact of the matter is, what we need to start doing is taking back, and I've said this several times, reclaiming our youth. And I say that because our youth have been taught now, you know, you listen to the music that they listen to. You watch what they watch on television. It's all mind-numbing. It takes them away from what they, if you look at the characters that they have on TV, you talk about people bleaching their skin, you know, the Sammy Sosa effect, if you want to call it that. So many of our people have been told, you know, light is right, and it's being reinforced through the media. But we aren't trying to fight back and say, you know, this is our culture, this is our history, we need to be proud of it. At one point we did, you know, Stokely Carmichael picked up the mantra of black power. And, it, you know, and James Brown was singing, you know, say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud. Mm-hmm. It wasn't so much a racially charged thing mm-hmm. as much as it was trying to remind black folk of what it meant to be black and to be proud of who you are. These air, you know, the levels of social consciousness in black people happened in spurts. You can see a level of rise in social consciousness almost immediately after slavery during the Reconstruction era mm-hmm. when you saw what they were doing. Then you see it back in the 1920s, but that was squashed during the race riots. Then you see it back in the 1960s during the Civil Rights era or the Civil Rights Movement. But we have to be aware of that. And I'm going to get off my soapbox now because if I could just sit in, I'll be cool with that. But that was some of the points that I wanted to make.
All right. Thank you, Eric. Appreciate it. And let's get another caller on the line here.
Pam, I just wanted to say he was talking about black scholars on YouTube. Be careful of YouTube because everybody calling themselves a scholar on YouTube is not a scholar.
Yeah, but the names that
replace.
I named.
And you, wait. I'm not saying those people.
No. I'm not arguing that.
Let me finish.
Go ahead.
I was just saying that you can't replace black misinformation, white misinformation with black misinformation. That's all.
No, I'm not trying to do that either. Wait, hold on now, because I'm not trying to get into an argument with you. I'm not trying to, that's the first thing that we need to stop doing. Let's have moments where we can agree to disagree on certain instances, and let's be able to talk to one another. I didn't say that you did. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to add on to what you're saying. What I'm saying is when you're correct in saying not every person that jumps up and puts on the label or the T-shirt or the cape of saying I'm a black scholar or I'm a black leader or whatever, you should be wary of. Yeah, like I said, but the names that I named, these are people who've been doing it for years. And I'm talking like the late Dr. John Hendrick Clark. Like I said, and I agree with Kim on this, do your research. Do the research on the people, even the ones that I name, because of the fact that not everyone who claims to be a leader. I'll always refer back to people that I know, that I've researched, that I've looked at and understood. So I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm agreeing with you in saying we need to be very careful, because I've seen some very crazy people
exactly.
jump on there and say some very crazy things, and they're doing it from their sofa. And it's no different than some of the white supremacists who jump on and say the same thing from their sofa,
yeah.
encouraging other people to go up. And then you start seeing a Timothy McVeigh. You start seeing, you know, guys that shooting up in movie theaters. So I agree with you. Let's be very careful, and I agree with Kim, and we'll definitely 100% say that what we need to do is have, you know, area points in time where we need to research everything. And to close that out, I'll just say, we also need to be able to have conversations with one another and not look at it as somebody battling. I don't want to battle anybody. I do because I believe that our people need to be having conversations and dialogues like this. I may disagree with someone, but that doesn't mean I'm going to keep going at you and trying to battle you. We need to have intellectual, conscious conversations about our history because I think a lot of people are lost. In that mix when we start getting to exchanges that become overheated for no particular reason. And a lot of times we're trying to say the same thing.
All right. And, again, yeah, and you're right, we have to be very discerning with who we're listening to. They're very, very discerning, and that's the reason why, you know, I tell people, go back, research everything. If it's not adding up, it doesn't, you know, pass the sniff test, if you will, toss it out. And, you know, Raina was correct. You know, we don't want to replace white misinformation with black misinformation. That is actually correct. And, you know, we need to be discerning. But, again, that's why I say it's important that we learn the history, and we learn, you know, the real history and the information behind it as we pass it along to our children. But some of us don't even have the real information, and that's the reason why we have to start, you know, talking with one another, dialoguing, sharing this information. You know, one thing that I've always had issues with is how some people hoard information. Put the information out there. Share it with the rest of us. Share it with us so that we can share it with other people. So, you know, again, you know, it's about moving forward.
I was just going to say, and along with that, people who hoard information are generally people who don't want you to have access to the information. Because if you have access to the information, you know how full of shit they are. So if somebody just constantly tells you without, you know, giving you the information, oh, you need to open your eyes, or you need to see, or you need to do your own research, and they never present any information, they're not doing it for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
It's because they're scared of what would happen if you knew that they were full of shit.
Oh yeah, exactly. You know, and it's just, you know, again, I'm glad that we're talking about this. I'm glad that we're opening up the dialogue. I'm glad that we're sharing this information with one another, because it's important. And, you know, again, it's civil, and we want to make sure that what we do bring out and the way that we, you know, give this information and have this discussion, we want to make sure that it's not counterproductive. You know, we're trying to educate some people, which is why, you know, we lectured the first part of the show, because I wanted to make sure that that information is out there. Again, I challenge people to go out and research every word of what I said, every last word. And I'm
but see, the telling part is that you provide the information. So
yeah.
That's the other part. You provide
exactly.
Your own,
and
you provide the
research
to you. Yeah.
Exactly. And I link it up on my wall. If you all go to my wall, especially in the past day or two, I've put up a lot of articles, a lot of information. And if you go through my wall has a lot of activity. I put a lot of information up there. Raina puts a lot of information up there. We have a bunch of other lovely people who are generous enough to share their information with us on the wall. And, you know, research it, watch it, read the articles. And, again, we're definitely up for a challenge. If there is something up there that is incorrect or may have some holes in it, please let us know. That is not an issue. You know, none of us have those types of issues. You know, we welcome that, because I've been challenged before and I've been wrong and I'll be wrong again in the future, and it's okay. This is how we learn. This is how we grow. We have to learn how to put that ego to the side. But going back to something that Eric had said a minute ago, we do need to understand the psychology behind this. And I've been saying that for over a year, just different things. And that's not only pertaining to the religion, which plays a big part. And we will talk about race and religion one day. You know, that's going to be part. It probably will be part two, race and religion. That's a hot topic. But, you know, I have to do some more research on that before I bring it to you guys. But we have another caller on the line, area code 909. May I ask who's calling?
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mari Torres. Hi, everybody.
Hi, Mari.
Hello.
I wanted to chime in because I know we've been talking a lot about race and culture and things like that, and I think that one of the really important things that we really need to target on is communication, specifically as parents communicating with our kids, because, you know, there's a lot of outside information that is misinformation that's coming to our kids through the media, through television, through friends, even through teachers at school. And I think that parents really need to take the responsibility. And if you have a child that is dark skin or light skin or whatever, really pay attention to that child. Ask them, you know, how they feel about themselves. And you know if your child thinks that they're better than somebody because they're cuter or they're more light skin or whatever it is. We know these things that as parents, or we should at least know. And this is an opportunity for us to talk to our kids, because when you show your children that kind of attention and you show them love, then they get, you know, they're more interested in themselves, and they become more interested in finding out more about themselves, and maybe that's something that people could do together. I left traditional industry so that I can be with my kids, because it was like, it's crazy. The teachers at school, they're not teaching them nothing, and this history that they teach you in school, I had to learn Black history because I'm Puerto Rican, and there's Black definitely in my culture, but my husband is Black from African descent, and it's like, I'm not going to tell my kids, oh, it's just Puerto Rican pride, you know, power. And I couldn't do that. I had to teach them about exactly who they are in all aspects and give them love about themselves so that they're interested. And when somebody comes and tells them something about them being too dark or whatever, you know, they can stand strong in their own beliefs about themselves and know not to let any of that affect them. So that's just what I wanted to add.
Exactly. And a lot of people, just to kind of clarify some other things, there are darker Puerto Ricans. You have Puerto Ricans that are light complexion, and you have Puerto Ricans that are of dark complexion. And even when you go to other countries like Cuba, you know, if you want a good example, go pick up the Afro-Cuban All-Star Band. And you would think that this was just, you know, grandpa down the block, you know. So,
yep.
You know, they have, you know, different shades in these particular cultures as well, because a lot of people don't realize that. That's why I was talking about Mexicans that were of dark complexion, but you have Puerto
Ricans. And even within the culture, you have that racism and that colorism that still exists. My father was very dark Puerto Rican. My mother was very light Puerto Rican. And to answer someone in the chat room, yes, I am light-skinned, but my light-skin, when I'm in Puerto Rico, you know, I'm still dark. And not only that, but it's really not even about that. It is true. It's about the psychology, and every culture suffers from them. The lighter, the better. It's in every culture.
And there you go. There you go. It's happening across the board. And that's one of the points that I was trying to make and drive in from the very onset of this show, that this is not necessarily relegated to the African-American community. This crosses many different communities, many different cultures, ethnicities, nationalities. This is happening globally. And, you know, again, I want people to understand that, which is why I gave the examples that I gave earlier. So, you know, definitely go and look that up. You know, Africa, Asia, Latin America, South America, over in Arabia, South Saudi Arabia, you know, all of that is happening in these different places. Let's bring another caller on the line here. And we have an Atlanta call, 404.
Hi.
May we ask you to call?
Hi, Kim. It's Annalise. How are you?
Hey, Annalise. Welcome.
Yeah. I was listening online, and but wasn't really able to get through. For some reason, I think there's so many listeners that it's just, you know, hard to hear online. So anyway, so I was actually following you on phone better than I am following you online. So thanks for getting to my call. Yes, I'm a member of BNOA in Atlanta, of course. You know that. Just saying that for our listeners. But I did want to chime in. It's very interesting. It made me think of some of the encounters that I've had with actually men that I know in dating situations. One man that I dated from Africa, someone just mentioned that he was an African male, very dark skin. And what I learned about him, you know, in the course of dating was that he had real trouble seeing himself. You know, going back to the self-loathing, but seeing himself as handsome. Hello?
Yes, ma'am, please, go ahead.
Okay, yeah, so seeing himself as handsome. And, you know, as I more and more time we spent together, I could see he was really very much attracted to white women, very socially, you know, in social settings, you know, that's what would catch his eye. And I think, you know, the point that I wanted to raise about that, because that's certainly not the first time I've seen that, but the point I want to raise is the way in which, you know, anytime you are under any kind of colonial regime, colonial culture, colonialism, part of the aim of that is to dehumanize or to, to destroy the self-esteem that those subjects, as a subject of colonialism, actually have about themselves. So that's very real. And it's something that happens here in the States as well with what we call African Americans. It happens in the Caribbean It happens anywhere there has been this European conquest or invasion worldwide. Aboriginal people with Aboriginal people in Australia. So this is very fascinating to me when we see this. You know, that people who may be dark skinned and will, if you will, make choices about who they're attracted to on basis of actually their own self-loathing. So they see themselves as ugly, but then, you know, so the choice or the attraction that they have for the other is really based on that self-loathing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. That makes perfect sense. And, you know, again, that's why, you know, I was driving in the point about the lighter skin, the social status, the power and the wealth and the privilege, because I wanted people to see that common denominator there. And for those of you who are not aware, Annalise, she'll be on our show Sunday, September 2nd. And Annalise is the former pastor who is now part of the Black Free Thought community. So that promises to be a very lively conversation on Sunday, September 2nd. And I posted an interview that Dr. Hutchinson, well, not an interview, but an article that was on Free Thought Blogs under the LA Black Skeptics that Annalisa had written and an interview out there. And that information I'll repost it on my page as well as her interview with Dan Barker. But it promises to be a very lively conversation, but getting to your point. Yeah, definitely, you know, the colonialism definitely played a part. You know, it was one example that I gave in which over in India, how this started
out
with the Bible formations, but it was fueled when the British came over there. So, you know, it made an even worse or an even more counterproductive environment. Uh-huh. So, yeah, what you're saying is absolutely correct.
Yeah, it's not just with dating. Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. It's not just with dating. It's with skin bleaching, and it's with, you know, what we're doing with our hair. It's with what we're putting in our hair also to make it straighter, lighter. But this often coming from a place where, you know, after years and decades and centuries of colonialism, you know, of being subjected to a colonial power, which, you know, actually constructed this narrative of African people as ugly, as in some way undesirable, as so on and so forth. And I don't know if you noticed it, but often the darker the person's skin, the more ugly, you know, they were according to the narrative. You know, the bigger their nose or the hair texture or so on and so forth. So, but it comes out in the choices that people make. And I just think it's important that people hear it. It's not just about being educated or not. It's about, as the previous caller talking about, the psychological effect of being in a culture that has been deeply affected or impacted by colonialism. And, you know, I know people don't often want to be thinking about that, you know, to take it to that level that someone or some group intentionally crafted a narrative of dark-skinned peoples as ugly, but it is quite, quite true. I mean, white supremacy via, you know, colonial power or imperial power. And we see it as we sit around our TVs, and we continue to ooh and ah at pictures of women, you know, the most beautiful women or the most beautiful men are the one with the lightest skin, the one with the lightest eyes, the one with the, you know, the features connected to European, you know, heritage and ancestry. So it's something to really think about. Just want to throw it out there.
Definitely. I see some, you know, in, you know, kind of, you know, expound on that a little bit. I see some changes. I see some, you know, a little bit more acceptance of dark skin, especially after Barack Obama was elected. And no, we do not live in a post-racial America. We do not. You know, there's no way for me to sugarcoat that or to get around that. But from what I've seen, you know, with some of these television stations, in particular MSNBC, I see that they're hiring more newscasters or more reporters that are of a darker hue. So it seems right. as though some stations are trying to, you know, and then, you know, there have been anchors and reporters of, you know, darker hues over the years, as well as people on television
uh-huh.
and all of that. What I'm saying is that it can be better. And not only, you know, darker blacks, but also darker uh-huh. Latinos, darker Asians, darker, you know, across the board to show the real demographics in this country. So I guess, you know, to give some self-esteem, you know, to some of the young people as well as some of the older people. I just think it's important that, you know, we are represented properly, you know. So, you know,
I agree with that. I mean, I think it's important that we've seen more, but more doesn't necessarily mean that the powers that be who've made those choices
mm-hmm.
are altruistic, you know what I'm saying, because,
exactly.
or, you know, they have good intentions, because some of that is about money. And, you know, over the last 50 years especially, it has been economically advantageous for companies to have a, quote-unquote, black face for marketing purposes, because they know that people won't buy, you know, if they continue to just be representing their product via lighter-skinned or white-skinned persons. So, you know, it's not altogether about an embrace of darker-skinned persons, you know, or brown or black-skinned persons. It is often very connected to capitalism and capital gain, and the understanding that, hey, we can't just limit our market to these white folks. You want the dollar,
exactly.
you want the green. Yeah, you want the green of these people, then your representation has to be different, you know, and look like them, at least in some way, shape, or form. It doesn't mean that they have come to some wonderful consciousness, you know, some idea of diversity and an embrace, or, you know, they have an idea that these people are beautiful. Period, you know, as they are naturally, rather. But anyway.
And you're right, it does, you know, it does have a price tag to it, because when I was talking about East Asia, how there's an $18 billion market over there just for skin bleaching creams. And,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
so, yeah, you know, definitely, you know, that's, you know, something that, you know, needs to be explored and something that
mm-hmm.
we definitely need to talk about. So, yeah, no, you're absolutely correct on that. You know, there are, you know, many different aspects to this that need to be investigated. But as long as we're putting the information out there, again, like I said, we challenge you guys to go out here and research and investigate everything that we're saying, whether you agree with it or not. And, again, you know, even when you present your information, even if it's an opposing view for me, I'll research it. I don't have an issue with that. So, you know, again, you know, we appreciate it all. Thank you, Annalise. You know, you made
Thank
some
you.
Great points there.
All right. Look forward to being with you in September.
Exactly. And we're down to our last 12 minutes. And the call-in number is 310-982-4273. Again, that's 310-982-4273. And if you want to speak with us, you go ahead and press 1. And we have a couple of more callers here on the line here. Let's go ahead and pull in area code 419. Are you there?
Yes,
419?
I'm here.
May we ask who's calling?
My name is Marvin from Ohio.
Marvin, hey, welcome, Marvin.
How you doing? My opinion on this, if you're from, like, the Midwest, the Ohio's, the Michigan's, especially small town like Ohio, people, there are more multiracial kids than there are black kids. People don't realize that. You can walk down the street of my town, in most towns in the upper Midwest, and that's all you see. In my opinion, you can teach black history all you want, but there's just some black men, and maybe I'm saying it's more black men, who just, for any such reason, don't like black women. You know, and me and one of my friends got a good topic on that. Like, here you never see Asians with Asians. You see Asians with white people. You see East Indians with white people. But you don't see them with each other. Like, so a good example is that. And until you form opinion that you're worth something in your mind, And I don't think history will do that. That just has to come from the person at home, that you're worth something. This is the point of the mute. Like a good example, I was telling one of my friends, we were talking about like Bobby Jindal, governor of Louisiana. Do you think if he used his real first name, he would be elected?
Not in Louisiana.
I don't think he would. I don't think he would. I don't think Obama, if he wasn't married to Michelle, if Barack Obama was married to a blonde-haired, blue-eyed white woman, black people wouldn't have voted for him. I think Michelle kind of eased that. You know, because we don't want to admit that we looked at black people. That's the first thing we looked at. Who is he married to? Being married to Michelle helped sell Obama bigger than anything else.
But again, you know, I understand where you're coming from. But basically, you know, how do we get beyond that? Let's just say if he was married to, you know, a blonde-haired, blue-eyed, white woman, why should that make any difference?
It shouldn't make any difference, but in America, it does. I think.
Well, can I answer that?
Go ahead.
I want to say I think because for some reason we feel like that tells a lot about someone's character, who they're with, and I think. For black people, it would have been like, oh, he doesn't really care about black people. He's a sellout. You know what I'm saying? That would have sent a lot of red flags to the African American community. So that we feel even it shouldn't matter. Technically it shouldn't matter. But at the end of the day, that's how we judge people, and we think that's telling of their character and their politics.
Yes, and my opinion.
I mean, I think it depends
that,
on the people that you're talking about, but I think there is some truth to what the caller is saying. Like, I think for the majority of black people that are out there, I think that matters. But I mean, not to everybody.
You know, what do you think about
100% right though?
Why don't you do a good example of this? Look at like Quincy Jones. Look at Harry Belafonte. They will talk black, but speak white. To me, there's no validity on what they say. You can't love black people and say you love everybody, then hate black women. I told one of my friends that he is very pro black, but he won't date a black one. So there's something about.
But
you know,
I've never heard Harry Belafonte say anything against black women. Hate black women.
But what makes you think that they hate black women because they date white women?
He will personally tell you that. I mean. If you lived in, like, I don't know where you guys are from. If I'm talking mainly from Rust Belt, small town, Midwest. Because I can remember as kids, I have friends right now married to white women who dads called them N-words when they were 10, 12 years old. And now they have grandkids. But I told one of my friends, I said, you remember when you talked to this girl, we were like 7 years old, her dad called us all kinds of N-words? And we don't want to talk about that. We have, like, problems in America, which it's race to me now, it means more than anything. I see it on my job every day. I see it as being worse now than it was to me 20 years ago. It's so subtle. You know, when I started my job, I've been with the same company 18 years. When I started my job, when you had old school white men, they were just straight up with me. When you deal with Generation X and below, white males, it's the same. It's worse. It's you're fighting for, and we have a status. To me, we have made white women and on American women. This is us speaking, as the pride and joy of any man. We don't want to admit that, but they are. You will have. It's shocking that. I told one of my friends, like that one black guy who was a doctor who killed that white lady. She was a white lady with, like, four kids. You think that, why? You have access to a lot more women than her. But you will waste your time and kill that lady when you could have had a choice of any woman you want, probably in America, but we don't see white men.
But the thing is that the gentleman that, you know, killed that particular woman, you know, it seems as though he had some type of mental illness. I don't necessarily believe that that was, you know, anything necessarily specifically geared toward race, because there are black men that kill their black wives or black girlfriends, you know, so.
Okay, can I ask you one question?
Certainly.
In my opinion. This is my opinion.
Certainly.
Take this. Would you think, a good example, look how we do Kim Kardashian.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing. We have made Kim Kardashian a very rich woman for making a sex tape with a black man. And I was talking to one of my friends. This is a white friend of mine. He says, you know what, Marvin? I don't think Tim Tebow, would she try to date Tim Tebow? You think Tim Tebow would date her? No. And we don't want to admit why, because that pedigree, he's going to look at it like, wow, she's a hoe. We have made a whole millions and millions for making a sex tape with a black man. Do you think vice versa? We have.
Well, what I'm getting ready to say is, you know, I have my personal issues with pop culture across the board. And, you know, but not only with, you know, Kim Kardashian, again, across the board, you know, we put too much stock into these so-called celebrities, these so-called public figures. And, you know, she, you know, however she acquired her wealth, somebody gave it to her. And it wasn't just, you know, again, black people, you know, it was Latino people, it was white people. There are different people watching that reality show, different people buying the products that her and her family endorses. Some of that came from the fact that her father was part of the OJ trial. He was one of the attorneys. I mean, there are a lot of different factors there, but, you know, overall,
yeah.
You know,
but
overall.
Let me ask you a question.
Certainly.
How many white men are you going to see, athletes, are just going to run off, be married 40 days. It's shocking she did that with the half. Technically, Chris Humphries is black. It's shocking that she pulled that off with him. Then you got Kanye West. Guy after guy after guy after guy. And it comes to a point where you have to ask yourself, mentally, what's wrong with African-American men? Because I see that even in my town. It's what is in our psyche that we portray white women as the top thing you can get. I don't understand.
But again, you know, again, it goes back, you know, part of that, you know, because, you know, I can't fully explain it, but part of that has to do with the media. Some of it has to do with taboo, but we also have to remember, even before what was happening in this country, if you go back and you read some of the history, you know, even with some of the, you know, African nobility, many of them were world travelers, and some of them did date Europeans. I mean, you know, if you go back, and especially another example, Queen Charlotte, you know, look that information up. You know, she was multiracial or biracial or what have you, and she came from African nobility as well as English nobility. So, I mean, this has been going on for a while. This is nothing new as far as, you know, the cross-cultural dating. So it's not a new phenomenon. This has been happening for a while. Now, let's talk about why people have such an issue with it. But, you know, that's another story, and that's actually another show, because we're down to our last 2 minutes. And
okay, let me get off the
call. Number. Okay. Thank you, Marvin. We appreciate your calling. And our guest call-in number is 310-982-4273. Again, 310-982-7243. We're down to the last minute and a half. We may go into overtime. In order for you to be in on the overtime, you have to call in. You have to dial in. The people listening via the Internet, you won't be able to hear the overtime conversation unless you listen to the archive. So I'm telling you now to call in if you want to listen to the overtime conversation that's probably going to take place. But again, I wanted to give, you know, my thank yous and, you know, thank you for the support, for those who called in, those who are listening, those who are in a chat room, and those who are going to listen to the archives. And, you know, again, this is only part one of our race series. I believe our next show, the part two, will be race and religion. That won't be taking place. We're going to stagger this as well as stagger some of the other shows. Next Sunday, next Saturday and Sunday, Raina and I will be talking about conspiracy theories. The Sunday after that, we will be talking about biblical history, the origin of the Bible. So that's the show after that. So that should be interesting. Sunday, September 2nd, we will have the great Reverend Annalise Fonza on the show, and we will be talking with her about her transition there. And so we're looking forward to all of that. And until then, I definitely want you guys to have a lovely weekend. And we're going to take this into overtime, you know, even if only for another 15 minutes. Anyway, have a lovely weekend, everybody. And again, yeah, I see in the chat room, it's Irena conversing with someone about the ISIS papers.
Oh, my gosh. And, We're not going to get into that.
No, exactly. But that's, you know, another example of another book that's out there by, you know, and I've read the ISIS papers. And, you know, that book, as well as some, you know, and that particular author, as well as some other authors that are out there, while some of their points may have some validity, some other points are basking in misinformation. So we're just asking people, again, to be discerning. I'm not saying not to read it, but what I'm saying is when you do read it along with some other research, some information, so that you can understand that you have a full view of the situation. And also look at how they cite their works and see where they're getting their information from. I would advise you to go back to the original book and start reading as to where they get their information from, as well as other books out there. So don't limit yourself to, you know, a certain particular sector of writers. You know, broaden your horizons as far as what you're going to listen to and read out there. But I just think it's important. Someone brought up hair a little earlier. There was a young lady here in Chicago that is putting together a hair play. It's going to be a monologue. It should be interesting, and, you know, we'll address that a little bit later. But, yeah, definitely, you know, there are a lot of issues. And across the board, we just need to start addressing this and not necessarily continue to address it around the kitchen table, whispering to one another, whispering in one another's ear. We need to bring these issues out to the forefront. We need to bring it to the forefront, and we need to start discussing these things with one another so that we can move forward and start doing some self-healing and start dealing with. People need to understand what self-hatred is. People need to understand, you know, what internalized racism is. People need to understand what an inferiority complex happens to be. It's just, it's important that we address these issues, we define them, and then we find solutions to these particular problems and to these issues. And, again, you know, when a young lady, Vita, when she brought it up earlier about how some people aren't even aware of what they're doing or what they're saying, we need to learn how to recognize it by educating ourselves so that, in turn, we can turn around and educate other people. It's just, it's extremely important that we pass the information, we pass the knowledge along to one another. So on that note, I'm going to give everybody a couple of seconds to say a few things. Eric, anything else that you would like to contribute to the conversation? I think Eric may have dropped. But, Raina, anything else?
No, not a whole lot. You know, I just feel, I feel like a lot of things were said and a lot of those things were really dead on. I mean, you know, We think a lot about the ways that colorism affects people in a negative way, and there's also the flip side. Obviously, there's some people who are are not discriminated against, but you know, it goes the other way too. Like there are certain ideas that people have about people who have lighter skin, you know, that are false. You know what I mean? Like thinking
right.
that light mm-hmm. skin people think that they're automatically better than people who are darker skinned, or that they're smarter, or what have you. So it, you know, a lot of that goes both ways. So.
Mhm. Oh yeah, exactly. And it's going to take more than one show for us to, you know, deal with these particular issues and to bring forth some real solutions and changes, or at least make people cognizant of, you know, what they're doing, what they're saying, or what's happening to them. So, you know, again, you know, this is the beginning of a series, and we definitely will be addressing, you know, these particular issues more in depth as time goes on. Nakomi, any last words from you, dear?
Well, I'll definitely be looking into some of the information that was provided a little deeper, because I know this subject goes a little bit deeper than what a lot of people know. So I thank you for providing the information that you do on your wall. I think it can be really helpful, and we just have to talk about some of these things that, you know, a lot of times we don't necessarily feel comfortable in talking about. So it's just a matter of educating ourselves, like you said, and just being more open to why we think the way that we think about race and colorism and the whole idea of, you know, how we are divided mm-hmm. among some of these ideas. So that's all
excellent.
I really have to say.
Very good. Yeah, definitely. You know, I encourage you and others, please research this information. And Vita, any last words from you, dear?
I just recommend that people check out, Google the word shadism, and there's a cool video made by, I think it was a high school student at the time, and she interviews and people that she knows get all different backgrounds and ethnicities, and they discuss how shadism has affected them. It's really a good video, and I recommend you guys check that out. So that way you guys can see that it, you know, affects the Latino community, the Southeast Asian community, as well as the Black community and other communities. So check that out.
Excellent. And I have that posted on my Facebook wall. So shadism, I also posted it a couple of weeks ago. And the young ladies that directed that particular video, they said they were going to listen to today's show. And so we've mentioned it a couple of times today. So I hope, you know, they're pleased that, you know, and I hope that we represented their work properly. So, again, thank you. Thank you for those who called in. Thank you for those who, you know, spoke with us today, those that are listening in, not only to the archives, but that were listening live, and those in the chat room. I appreciate you. See you next Saturday, high noon, Reason, Science, and Skepticism with Raina. High noon next Saturday, high noon, our show next Sunday, in which we will be dealing with conspiracy theories, in particular New World Order and Illuminati. It should be fun. Guys, have a lovely weekend. I appreciate each and every last one of you. Thank you for the support. Take care.